Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this
and
Constitution,
so, my fellow Americans,
the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can
this
do for your country.
This nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
For peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
We are live. This is the Monday night hour of truth. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio, and I'm Dave. Here comes that guy you love to hear from again.
The problem is that the way Bush has done it over the last 8 years is to take out a credit card from the Bank of China in the name of our children, driving up our national debt from $5 trillion for the first 42 presidents. Number 43 added $4 trillion by his lonesome, so that we now have over $9 trillion of debt that we are going to have to pay back. $30,000 for every man, woman, and child. That's irresponsible. It's unpatriotic.
That was, in fact, totally irresponsible of the last president, Mr. George H.W. Bush, Jr., and it is even more irresponsible of our current commander-in-chief to have driven that from 9 to 15 trillion in 3 years. How does this happen? And you folks who follow my blog out there and listen also, forgive me, because what we're going to do here tonight in the National Minute is just kind of a reiteration of today's blog. But it's important to understand some things here as the primary election comes. So here we come. The president comes along and he says, "Hey, oops, I need another $3 trillion. Come on, give me a lift in the debt ceiling." Well, you've got one party in charge of one house and one party in charge of another house, so you can see right away there's going to be a problem. There's going to be a problem, especially because one of these two parties has been stomping their feet and beating their chest and saying, "We are the people of fiscal responsibility. We are the conservatives." Well, what happens is the two leaders of the two houses get together and they make a deal. And believe me, this deal is made before the first vote is cast. All right, now, just follow this for a second. So over here in the House of Representatives, they pass a bill that says that grants the president his debt ceiling increase, but it attaches to it a provision to balance the federal budget, freeze spending next year at this year's levels, and cut $500 billion off of spending in the next 10 years. Then they get out and beat their chest at a press conference and say, "Look what we did." And, of course, it goes to the Senate and gets voted down. And then the Senate sends back a bill that they're going to call a compromise with the House that grants the president his debt ceiling and pays for that by raising taxes on the rich by 3%. And then they get out there and have a press conference and beat their chests and do glory hallelujahs. And that, of course, gets killed by the House. So everybody goes home, comes back on day two. So the House decides to compromise a little bit with the Senate. And they send back to the Senate a bill with the debt ceiling that the president requested. They've lowered the cuts in spending to $300 billion. They balance the federal budget at the end of the five-year period. And then they cap spending at that level for the next 10 years. And the Senate rejects that, but sends back a compromise late in the afternoon that grants the president his ceiling, holds the increases in spending in the next 15 years, And because they've held spending, increases in spending for the next 15 years, they've given to the House of Representatives that they only need to raise taxes on the filthy rich by about 2% instead of 3%. And, of course, you know what happens in the House of Representatives. So everybody goes home and they come back. And what happens the next day is the House of Representatives sends a new bill over there. And, of course, in that bill, they give the president his debt ceiling increase. Notice how all these compromises, the only thing constant is the president gets his $3 trillion debt ceiling increase, which is what they were really arguing about to start with, theoretically. So the House sends over this thing that gives the president his debt increase. This time it only cuts $2 billion in spending in over 10 years, and it balances the budget after that 10 years. And the compromise bill they get back after the Senate rejects it keeps the president's debt ceiling, but it doesn't cut any spending. But it does give something to the House in that it only increases taxes on the rich by 1%. Rejected. Finally, we come to day four, and there's a big press conference, and you hear that they've worked all night, and they believe they've got something sorted out here. So the Senate sends a bill late in the day over to the House that gives the president his $3 trillion, and it promises to cut $500 billion in spending if the joint committee that they're going to form can agree to what needs to be cut. And then they promise to vote sometime later on a balanced budget. And this seems to be enough compromise to get the thing through. So what we end up with is both houses giving the $3 trillion and nothing else happening. So the president gets his $3 trillion and nothing else happens. There's no cuts, no balanced budget, no anything. But here comes the beautiful part. Here comes the beautiful part of the political ballet. Now, over in the House of Representatives, I've got Congressman A, Congressman M, Congressman H, and Congressman L all running for office. What do they get to say on the campaign trail? What they get to say is, I voted against increasing the debt ceiling three times. I voted to balance the budget, and I voted to cut spending by $1 trillion, 500 the first vote, 300 the second vote, 200 the third vote. Vote for me. I am the fiscal conservative. I voted to kill the debt ceiling three times. I voted that. And I voted to balance the budget. And I voted to cut spending by $1 trillion. You're going to eat that up. You're going to vote for the fiscal conservative. And it'll be business as usual. And that is up to you, really.
I will be held accountable. I've got 4 years. If I don't have this done in 3 years, then there's going to be a one-term proposition.
Here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, it's Christmas in July and August and September. Last year on Christmas Eve, MGC paid off the department store layaway accounts of two Missouri families who were not able to provide Christmas for their children. This year, we would like to at least double that number, and in an attempt to do that by the holiday season, we're asking you to consider donating a few dollars toward that effort. We know the holiday season is the most difficult time of year to ask for donations, so we're planning ahead and asking you to give whatever you can so that a few Missouri families will be able to celebrate at Christmas. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Secret Santa page. All the details are there for you to donate by PayPal, check, or money order. Conservatives have proven to be the most generous and most benevolent people in the United States. Please help us with this very small charitable project.
With the August primary looming in about 7 weeks, we find the time is running out on who we vote for. Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? Do the representatives we send to Jefferson City really care what you think? Or do they do the bidding of the special interest groups and lobbyists? It's your choice. You can elect a true citizen legislator or an establishment politician who takes his marching orders from the party elitists and his donors. Either way, time is running out for our state and country. Hear the clock of freedom ticking? I'm Terry Varner, and I approve this message. I've got a feeling that the
tide is turning. Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
We're back. It's Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is the Hour of Truth. I'm Dave, and we do have a feeling the tide is turning. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we are riding the top of that wave. I am absolutely honored tonight. I feel like the co-host tonight, I'm telling you folks, because we have the Sloan Ranger himself in the studio. How are you doing, Lloyd?
Very good, Dave, and it's great to be on Blog Talk Radio. I want to tell you, you know, I got really excited when you asked me on, and here to share the Madison's Lost Amendment with you and your listeners.
Yeah, Lloyd's going to push his book here in a little while, but I'm telling you, he is. I've had some discussions with Lloyd, and he knows this stuff. I'm going to be the pupil here tonight, and I hope you folks are too, because Lloyd has been studying this thing, and this is, I am convinced, he's convinced me, he sold me, that this is a way, and maybe the best, and maybe even the only way, to restore states' rights, to restore the power balance back to the way the founders intended it. Just give us a start, Lloyd. What is this thing, and where did it start out at?
I do confess I am working on a book. I wasn't going to hawk it too much tonight, but it does start there. I mean, I've been working on a book now for 2 years, quit my day job about 2 years ago to work on a Constitution book. And long story short, I guess my frustration was there's a lot of books on the Constitution out there, a lot of things that point out the problems, and very short on solutions. And I really wanted a book that had some solutions. And I stumbled across what I think is a great idea, originating in an idea in James Madison, actually, but other people have also come up with it, and it's called a repeal amendment or state repeal amendment. The basic idea is to let a representative majority of states repeal, nullify, void any act of Congress or federal regulation in whole or part. So it's a way to transfer that power out of the federal government, where it's centralized, and decentralize it back to states, not one state at a time, but where a majority of states, a special majority, could actually essentially veto or repeal Congress. If we had this, Obamacare would be history. We'd have never even had a Supreme Court decision.
So let me just review here for a second and make sure that I get it. Let's don't go as heavy as Obamacare. Let's go with something simple like. A federal law.
About
a federal
light bulbs.
Law. Yeah, exactly. That's where I'm going.
Light bulbs?
That's where I'm
They're
going. So, the federal government says I can't have incandescent light bulbs. So some majority of states gets together and says, well, that isn't going to work for us, and that's it. There's no more such law.
Correct. They repeal
okay.
it. That's
okay.
correct.
Okay. So that actually gives the power to the states to say just flat no to the federal government.
Correct. Okay. The idea has been, the reason James Madison had thought about it, and I don't know if you want a history lesson on this.
Because I do.
Why did Madison come up with an idea like that? And even from the beginning, in the early history of the Republic, there has always been a really deep question, who decides what that Constitution means? Who is that final authority that gets to say what it means? Now, if you ask most Americans, they're going to tell you the Supreme Court these days. That's just kind of a doctrine that we've evolved. But believe me, that doctrine was not set in the early part of our history. Madison and Jefferson had real problems with that, and they saw it coming. They realized the Supreme Court was in a kind of power position to make that final decision, and they didn't like it. Well, nullification was another idea. It's called nullification in the early part of the Republic, and people can scratch out, or, you know, if they still have their high school history books hanging around, maybe they can look that one up. John C. Calhoun did not like a federal tariff during the Jackson administration. He considered it was too high, but he also considered unconstitutional. South Carolina nullified that tariff on their own. That created a constitutional crisis. Jackson had troops on the border. Eventually everybody backed down, and, you know, we got diffused. But Madison, in responding to that, said, no, what South Carolina is trying to do is not correct. However, there is still an underlying problem that we need to address, and that's when he said not just one state should be able to push back, but if a majority of states say that tariff's too high, get rid of it. And that's the basic genesis of how I found it in Madison.
And Madison, now, I think you told me when we were talking about this, didn't specifically say himself what he thought that majority ought to be, but that did
that's
come
correct.
Up later.
That's correct, yeah. That's where Madison leaves a little to be desired, because what we know is that it has to be at least a majority. Because if you let a minority of states do it, then there's always a potential for division and you'll break the union apart. So you've got to have at least a majority. It's also clear, and Madison did make this point, three-fourths of states would be decisive, because three-fourths of the states today can change that constitution however they want. They
right.
are the ones who can amend it. So it is clear that if you had three-fourths of states, you would rule. That's dominant.
Now, in fact, to amend the Constitution, you have to have three-fourths.
That's correct.
Right.
Absolutely. It's both necessary and sufficient. Correct.
Right.
You can't do it for less. And if you have three-fourths, I mean, if we had three-fourths of states, we'd do whatever we want to do. Right?
Right.
And that's just the way the Constitution is set up. But Madison knows somewhere in between there, somewhere in between a majority and three-fourths is a sweet spot that we need to figure out. He didn't specify it.
Right, because we're not trying to change the Constitution. All we want to do is use the light bulbs.
We got to change the Constitution and amend it order to give the states this power.
Yeah, I get it. But what I'm saying is we can have a majority less than three-fourths, because we're not trying to do any major changing of the earth or anything rewrite the Bible or anything. All we want to do is get our light bulbs back.
We're just trying to transfer that power. Exactly.
Yeah.
We're trying to say, we're kind of small government guys, right? So that's what I mean by our team is the small government team. Let's not mince words. And we tend to like decentralized power for that reason. We don't like it centralized in Washington. Believe me, the big government guys like it the way it is. And there has just been this tendency the past 100 years to keep pushing that power more and more in Washington. We got to put a check on that.
Yeah. Absolutely, and what we're seeing right now is the culmination, like you said, of 100 years of just that centralization becoming more and more and more and more, and so finally we get down to a point where not just the president, but the president and a bunch of bald-headed guys in back rooms with no names and no windows on their walls are actually making laws dictatorially.
Oh, it's rampant. I mean,
yeah.
It's so outside the original intent of the American Constitution. Everyone is seeing it now. I mean, the title of the book was Constitutional Awakening, because I did believe we were in a period of awakening for the American people. They really are seeing. I never went to a Tea Party rally or even most conservative groups, Republican groups. The Constitution comes up. It is clearly a common denominator of concern for many Americans, even somewhat on the left, too. They have different concerns sometimes than we do. But they certainly have concerns about undeclared wars, for example.
Oh yeah, sure.
Or this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't share all our concerns, but they also, the more honest ones, I'll say, do see a problem in the Constitution, and some of them would even like to get it back. You know,
right.
They'd like to have a Constitution again that can limit the government.
And the beauty of something like this is that It could feasibly keep the government from going too far in either direction.
Agreed. Oh, yeah. I mean, when
yeah.
you're talking states, the other thing that I just noticed doing the research is states are simply more representative of the American people.
Right.
It's something that we've lost track of, but, you know, the average person can still be elected a state rep. Good luck becoming a U.S. senator or a congressman without having $1 million to start. Actually, that's you wouldn't get anywhere with $1 million. You need a lot more than that, I think. It's just no longer the average American. But when you check out Jefferson City, or you go to Springfield, Illinois, or Lincoln, Nebraska, Topeka, Kansas, state capitals, you find average people there. You find nurses and doctors and businessmen, you know, small business owners, farmers, you know. People you would never find in Congress anymore, you know. That's an advantage of this, too, because what this idea essentially does, and if people grasp it and people get it fairly quickly, is it mirrors Congress out in the states.
Right.
Congress is two houses, two chambers, a House and a Senate. The Senate is each state has the same number of votes, and the House is by population. So if you do this state repeal amendment idea, what you've done is you've said you have to have a majority of states, just like the Senate, and they have to represent a majority of the American people, just like the House. And if you get that and you get it out in the states, you're in essence better than Congress. You're more representative. That's the final word. That's
okay.
The idea.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Jefferson and Madison and all the old boys, they die, and this thing gets kind of found someday later under Madison's bed somewhere.
I could tell you how I found it. If you want, I mean, I may be the first person to actually use Madison's Lost Amendment in this particular context. The phrase Madison's Lost Amendment I got from Pat Buchanan. So I will share that with people, too. He was the one that first got me started looking down this. Back in the 1990s, he gave a speech in St. Louis, where I attended, and he mentioned Madison's Lost Amendment in his speech. And it was roughly in this context of controlling the federal government. And that thought stuck with me. I thought, what an intriguing idea. I wonder what Madison had in mind. And years later, I started looking for it. So I wrote Pat Buchanan and said, Pat, you remember ever saying this in St. Louis once? What did you have in mind? He wrote me a delightful postcard back saying, yes, I do remember that phrase. I have no idea what it was now. He told me he'd done a lot of research in that period for a certain book and maybe start there, and if he ever figured out what it was again. The phrase just caught my eye. Other historians have used the phrase, but they meant other things by it.
Right.
So Madison had a few other amendments also that got kind of lost through history, and this was one that I found.
In fact, one of his favorites was one of the two that did not get ratified in the original proposed Bill of Rights.
Very good, sir. Yeah, that is now our 27th Amendment, and some
right.
people have referred to it as Madison's Lost because it was in the Bill of Rights and then went 200 years without being ratified. It limits congressional pay is what it does.
Yes.
And back in 1992, somebody dusted it off and passed it. And it's part of the original Bill of Rights, correct. There's actually another provision that Madison had in the Bill of Rights that got removed by Congress, and he was upset about it. And so that also has sometimes been referred to by historians as Madison's Lost Amendment as well. That one deals with religious freedom, actually.
Oh.
And so it's a little bit different. Oh, yeah.
How was it different than the first?
It actually restricted states. I mean, it's actually beautiful to understand this because it's more evidence that the founders clearly did not mean for the First Amendment to apply to states. They meant it to only restrict Congress.
Right.
And Madison had a separate part of the Bill of Rights that prohibited, it protected what he called, I think it is freedom of conscience is his term, from state intervention. And Congress didn't allow it to go through. They blocked it. They really did not want to interfere with states, period.
No,
that is,
no, absolutely.
Clearly what their intent.
Yeah, they were all very, and this is one of the beautiful things we lost when the 17th came around, is someone in Washington jealously protecting our state.
Correct. Oh, yeah. There's no doubt that in the populist or progressive fervor to give people more voice in the Senate, they had an unintended consequence of disrupting the balance of powers between the states and the federal government when they let us vote on senators. That's a fact. Yeah, if the state legislature in Missouri were picking the senator, that senator might not be a better senator. I won't say that for sure. Might be a better one. But
he'd pay
more attention to what the state wants.
Yeah,
that's a fact.
He'd know who he was working for. That's right.
He would know who the boss is.
That's right. And just like this, we wouldn't have Obamacare right now.
No, probably not. Although I know we have different federal judiciary. I'm not, you know, and we wouldn't have Obamacare, at least from Missouri, because Claire couldn't have voted for it. No way. In fact, we wouldn't have Claire, let's be honest. Claire wouldn't be there. We might still have Blunt, which is a different problem, perhaps, but Claire would not be there. That's a fact.
Okay, yeah. There got to be some Sloan Ranger fans out there tonight. 347-677-1835. 347-677-1835. We're up against a break. When we come back from this break, we're going to go right back to Lloyd Sloan, and we're going to find out how we go about getting this done.
Okay, Missouri Patriots, I don't have to remind you that our ancestors fought and died for our right to exercise our voices and shape government in the interests of the people. And yet, in most elections, less than 20% of the population bothers to vote. Gas prices are outrageous, the economy is a disaster, and we are being regulated to death. Bad government and weak leadership are destroying the American way of life on a national and state level, and it's time to send a message to Washington, D.C. and Jefferson City and tell them we have had enough. If you're not registered to vote, the deadline to be eligible to vote in the August primary is July 11th and October 10th for the general election in November. The Patriot Revolution begins in 2012, and it happens at the polls. Vote in the August primary and the November general election, and bring a friend. The Constitutional Republic depends on it.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Monday night hour of truth. I'm Dave. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio, brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition. We've still got Lloyd Sloan with us. The Sloan Ranger himself is with us tonight, and Lloyd's telling us about his exciting life here after he quit his full-time job to write this book. Lloyd, did you just decide to write a book about the Constitution, and then as you were trying to decide what to do with the Constitution, you settled on this, or did you head into it to write about this specific topic?
No, I it was an act of faith when I first started out. I did know I wanted to write on the Constitution. It's a topic that had bothered me since high school, really. So I knew the thing had problems, and I needed to do some research. I wouldn't even be thinking of publishing a book if I hadn't found solutions. So it was an odyssey, or an expedition, if you will, you know, like Columbus set off, see if you can find that new world, you know, before you drown, so to speak. And the anti-federalists, I'll say, when I read them too, were very helpful. We call them the anti-federalists. I had not read them prior to working on the book, at least not extensively. Those are the people who were skeptical of the Constitution.
Right.
Patrick Henry was one of them. He's
probably
the most prominent that people might know. New York was full of them. There were some really brilliant writers. There was a Melanchthon Smith, I recall, very good writer. Robert Yates as well out of New York. These are forgotten figures. Most people won't know who these men are. But they wrote some really good essays as to their concerns with the Constitution. One was the unlimited taxing powers. I can tell you that one, too.
Right.
So they had a definite – and they were proven right on that, too. They
well,
were
yeah,
in
– like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, exactly. No. I'd like to be able to tell people that Justice Roberts got it wrong, but I really don't think he did. I think he's one of the more honest ones up there at this point.
Well, he got it wrong by rewriting the government's case.
Yeah, that may be a stretch, I agree, although I think Obama's people in the end did say, and in case you don't like the Commerce Clause argument, it's also a tax, so I think they threw it in, but, the Commerce Clause argument is absurd, I agree with that, there's no way, in fact, most of Obamacare is unconstitutional, not just the mandate people.
Oh,
the Commerce Clause is so destroyed at this point; it truly is a blank check to a.
Well, that's right. That's right. I mean, if you go back and put the Commerce Clause back in the context of the way it was supposed to be, then we've been doing unconstitutional things for the last 85 years.
Agreed. Yeah. Oh, yeah, at least. No, you're right. Since, I mean, I could, the case that comes to my mind is Wickard v. Filburn. It's
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, that's your smoking gun, people.
Yep.
So we can almost give you the day the Commerce Clause died and pin it down to that one moment.
That's the wheat farmer, right?
That's the wheat farmer in Ohio.
Right.
Growing wheat to feed his own chickens and his own family. And they told him, nope, can't do that. That's interstate commerce.
Yeah.
So,
well,
pretty
I
much,
mean, they didn't tell him he couldn't do it, but they wanted to regulate his farm. And he said, no, I don't do anything with interstate commerce. And the Supreme Court said, yeah, the federal government can regulate your farm because, you know, by not putting your wheat on the market, you are affecting interstate commerce.
Correct.
Yeah.
My brother once told me that he, too, was probably violating interstate commerce because he wasn't growing any wheat either. So, you know.
Right.
So, I mean, this is the absurd logic that
right.
the New Deal put us on with the commerce. Once you break the Commerce Clause to that degree, there are no bounds. I think what's interesting to me from our side, the small government side, we seem to have awakened very quickly to the reality now that the federal government's unlimited.
Right.
Believe me, it's been unlimited in theory for too long. We just finally have, I think, awakened to that, which is good. That's good news to me, not bad. The founders of this country were extremely sensitive to what they would call unlimited government. And, you know, that's true of the king. Once that king passed laws saying, like, he could rule on everything no matter what, boy, that was a red flag in front of a bull with the generation that founded America.
I agree. Okay, so now you've got this book coming out, but give us a preview. We don't want to wait. We don't want to wait for the States' Rights Amendment till the book comes out. How do we get this thing rolling, Lloyd?
Well, state by state, there are two avenues. I want to back up a little bit because I do think there are two ways to get a constitutional amendment. People need to understand that. The first one, which we've always done, frankly, never done any other way, is for 2/3 of Congress, both houses, to propose the amendment, and then 3/4 of states would ratify it.
Right.
Every amendment we've ever had has been done that way. I do think we are in unique times now. We need to look at the second method, which is for 2/3 of the states, bypassing Congress, mind you, bypass Congress, 2/3 of the states can call a convention to propose amendments to the Constitution. And I would personally work both those avenues. And so one way to do it would be ask the next U.S. Senator from Missouri, ask whoever the Republican nominees are. Incidentally, Todd Akin has endorsed this idea so publicly, so I will give him that plug at least. But, ask McCaskill, Bruner, Steelman, ask all the congressional people, would you support an amendment like this? Would you help introduce it, et cetera? And then do the same thing at the state reps. I do know that there's a lot of State Senator Lemke comes to mind very quickly, who's willing to sponsor this in the Missouri legislature next session. So 2013, we could be very proud in Missouri. We could be the first state to actually put this proposal out there and pass it both houses of our legislature.
Right. Well, theoretically, we were the first state to say no to Obamacare. So Missouri's always been a bellwether state when it comes to standing up for what we want.
Amen. No, I agree with that completely, and I also think because we are such a bellwether state, if you can pass it in Missouri, you can pass it in almost any other state of this union. You might have trouble with California and New York, but you can get it through just about any Midwestern state, most Southern states, most Western states. So Missouri, very important state to lead off with if you can do it.
So I heard you say that Todd Akin has endorsed this and that Senator Lemke is on board. And does that that leads me to believe that maybe you've been out in some wholesale fashion trying to get as much behind this as you could?
True. I mean, I have gone out and lectured on it and stuff, and I have done things behind the scenes. There's other legislators that have told me they are very sympathetic, but I'm not comfortable giving their names until they would be comfortable with a public endorsement of the idea. But yes, I mean, I've I've worked behind the scenes for sure and emailed the idea to many state legislators and also federal, you know, other congressmen and stuff. Yes.
How do you feel when you talk, forget the elitists for a while, when you talk to just the normal people on the street, when you give lectures on this and there's a guy like me in the audience, what kind of reception do you think you're getting from the general populace?
That's a good question, and I would say that I like the issue for that reason, too. When I talk to again, small government people, our team, they like it. I'll tell you what some of the concerns are from people on our side that I respect, but for the most part, the basic idea they like, because they are small government, so they want this thing decentralized. They really want to reduce the federal government and get it back to states. There it's popular once they grasp the idea. If you're talking to a progressive, which I don't speak to those groups often, but I do, I know some people, good friends who are, they're hostile. They're not going to like this idea. They will immediately, their instincts are going to be riled by it because they realize we want the power in Washington, okay? We like the power in Washington.
Right.
We like the way things are going. This would reverse that. We hate this idea, and they will hate it pretty quickly, frankly. And that's what I like about the idea is it's constitutional, so basically it forces people to take the Constitution seriously and talk about it again. And two, it is a very good litmus test to determine are you a big government person or a small government person. You know,
right.
Where is your agenda? So it's important enough to change the logic of the system towards our direction and also to tell the white hats from the black hats, the good guys from the bad guys.
Exactly. 347-677-1835, listeners, 347-677-1835. I know you've all got to have some questions about how this thing is going to pan out here.
The other thing I would say, and I'll go ahead and mention this may,
yeah.
I mean, your listeners may have these concerns, and so, you know, I don't mind expressing them, but I know Phyllis Schlafly, very opposed to, or has been in the past, not to this amendment, but to just what she calls Article 5 amendment
right.
conventions or con-cons is the phrase that they will often use. She certainly is a respected figure. I do understand her objections. So I think her concerns are certainly valid. We've never done it this way before. I would not personally risk a so-called con-con for just any old amendment myself. I think that's a mistake. There's too much risk for too little gain. I view the state repeal amendment or Madison's Lost Amendment as such a game changer that it is worth a little bit more risk, frankly. And part of me, I will confess, really does want the states to stand up and say no more and stand up together as a group and say enough's enough. We're stepping up for the American people. We're putting brakes on this thing and just bypass Congress completely. That will reestablish who's boss in this system. Okay?
Right.
And that part appeals to me a great deal as well. So.
No, yeah, and me too. I really like this idea, and I read the pamphlet you sent me, and I'm pretty much sold on how great this could be. And like you say, like you call it, a game changer. And it will be. I mean, we will get, if we ever actually get this thing to the center of the stage, it will get as much fight from the progressives as fair tax or anything else that is anti-progressive. And what the progressives hate about something like this is, if you look at the big picture, the more local the power and government becomes, the less progressive people tend to be. I mean, for you and I to sit here in Missouri and believe that we need to take money from rich people to pay poor people. We've got to be looking at a big picture where people are hungry in New York City and people are hungry. We're sitting here in Missouri in the breadbasket of the country, and the more closed we make that circle, the less progressive we feel.
Agreed. Oh yeah. I also would say when you're talking about some of the, I don't know if I'm misreading what. You intended, but some of these issues, like Social Security, I'll use that one, Medicare, the welfare state, you know, people that are truly dependent on the money, often for no fault of their own, and frankly, they have expectations. They've been promised this. So So you have this big issue. Now, technically, all those things I just mentioned are unconstitutional if you go back to the original intent of the document itself.
And right.
None of them are authorized other than these, other than to go out and break the Commerce Clause and just do what you want. That means that any attempt to restore the Constitution by traditional means is going to be very difficult, because you're not going to be able to tell an entire generation of Social Security recipients, oh, incidentally, now we're following the Constitution, so you're hosed.
Yeah.
That's not going to work, people. There's no way to get it back. The state repeal amendment lets us get it back by selectively repealing certain aspects of Social Security that can transition us off. And that is also what I like about it. It's a little bit more gradual approach, still restores the balance, still gets the power outside. It also could be used against Roe v. Wade, believe it or not. And I know that's counterintuitive, because Roe v. Wade is this Supreme Court opinion. It's true. But this may get too technical for people. The Supreme Court can only hear cases based on the authority to hear that appeal granted by Congress. It's in Article 3, Section 2. I repeat, all appeals to the Supreme Court and to federal courts are done by the approval of Congress, and they grant the authority. We could, through the state repeal amendment, Madison's Lost Amendment, simply repeal that authority granted by Congress on abortion law cases alone, and just structure it that way, repeal that authority. Roe v. Wade is history. That's a brilliant idea, I think. So that one also appeals to me.
Right. Well, okay. So now, have you considered, I mean, I don't know how close you are to really wanting to just blow this thing totally up in Manhattan Project style, but Lisa, our resident education expert, she has a blog, a very well-known website called homeschoolersunited.org. She has a pledge there that basically is a pledge that our representatives to Jefferson City sign that says, I won't do anything to screw with homeschoolers. And she puts up there this... All of these people were given a copy of the pledge, and these people signed it, and these people refused to sign it. And there's no in between. You either did or you didn't.
Right.
And that really puts some people's feet to the fire.
No, and that is I'm not prepared to do that right now. I probably should be prepared to do that by the November election, realistically, and get legislators on record. As whether or not they support a state repeal amendment or not.
Right.
That is an excellent idea. I can use some help. Somebody wants to do that. I'm all ears, you know.
Okay.
I'd love to have somebody do that. Frankly, now that I think about it, it's probably better to do that in the primary than it is even in the general. I don't believe at where we're at now, no progressive Democrat could support this idea. So it's not going to really – now, we might be able to ferret out which Republicans – you know, are hostile to this idea, and
right.
That could be helpful, but it'd be more helpful to know that in a primary than it would in a general election, you know, where other things might be more important to people by then.
Right. So tell me, you mentioned Todd Akin and you mentioned Jim Lemke. Do you have anyone else on board that you can say right now or not? I mean, I'm not trying to put you on the spot.
Those are the only two that I'm comfortable mentioning that have given me – they both are out publicly on this, okay? Todd Akin mentioned it in a debate in St. Charles several weeks ago. I had given him the flyer. There are others, and there are others who have definitely told me privately they like this idea. But, you know, I don't want to necessarily out them until they're ready.
Right.
They may have their own reasons why they haven't made a public endorsement. Jim Lemke made a public endorsement. He did so on the radio station here in St. Louis, 97.1 FM, on the Jamie Allman show, I believe.
Good.
And so, yeah, he has endorsed it publicly.
And said he would sponsor it.
That's correct. He offered to sponsor it. That is also
now,
true.
Now, what we're talking about, folks, when we say sponsor, Jim Lemke is in, of course, if he's not your guy, and you don't recognize his name, he's in Jefferson City. So what they would do in Jefferson City is what? I mean, they can't pass this thing in Jefferson City. What do they do up there?
Well, there's model legislation that was started in South Carolina. So I would give them the model legislation in South Carolina where the state of Missouri would call for an amendment convention specifically to propose this state repeal amendment, and under certain limitations that I think were pretty good in the South Carolina wording as far as how the convention would be held, time limits, things like that, how delegates are picked, et cetera. And then pass it in Missouri, and then that we would be the first state to lead off and say we're now calling for it. If you get 38 states, I believe is it 38?
Yes,
2/3.
38. Yes.
Yeah, 38. To call for that convention, then it's going to be held, and that's it. And then the amendment will go out for ratification because that'll be one of the first lines of business, assuming every state.
No,
I'm
sorry. I got ahead of there.
38 to 3/4.
33 yeah. is 2/3.
Yeah, 33. Yeah. That's the 2/3.
Exactly.
Now, you know, what will realistically happen, what I think would happen, is, you know, as I said, there are some of our people who would like the state repeal amendment. They will support the state repeal amendment. They are simply too uncomfortable with the what they would call Article 5 con approach through the state.
Right. Right.
So I think they would work Congress, and we would, you know, I personally don't have a problem working the states. I like that approach and will confess that. But others, I can also understand why they would want to work Congress first. And whoever gets it proposed first wins, right?
I can understand why they would want to work Congress first. I don't believe I like their chances there.
No, I think their chances, though, do improve as ours go up. So you can imagine what this country would be like when you get that 32nd state that says we're ready for a convention.
Well, and that's what I said a couple of years ago when I was out screaming for a con for a balanced budget amendment. I was saying we'll never get there. We'll never get there because when we get 30 states, Congress will get on board.
Correct. That's exactly right. No, I think you're reading the politics perfectly. They would be under serious pressure. I mean, realistically, this is an unprecedented thing to do. And so if we know that the will of the people have spoken and they really do want this amendment or whatever other amendments, then Congress ought to act. And how – I mean, as badly as I think of Congress, I can't believe they put the country through an unprecedented experiment like that if all they had to do is just – act and say, here it comes, guys. We hear you loud and clear. We're going to do it. Now, if they're willing to be that obstinate and hold it up, then I'd pull the trigger on them, absolutely, and say, you know what, guys? This is why we're doing it, because you guys don't listen. So here it comes, you know, full bore, right at you.
Okay. 347-677-1835. That's 347-677-1835 to get in on this conversation. We're going to take a break, our last break here in just a moment, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk to Lloyd Sloan, the Sloan Ranger, about his book, about his appearances, about how you might be able to get him to come and talk to you. And then in a little bit backward fashion, we're going to do what most hosts do when they first start out, and we're going to find out a little bit about Lloyd Sloan and who he is and why he is what he is. Before we go to break, though, I'm going to turn the mic over to my producer, Lisa Payne Nager, and she is going to tell you about the Missouri Grassroots Grass Fire Alert. Lisa.
Good evening. Thanks, Dave.
You're welcome. Thanks for coming.
Thanks. Glad to be here. Always glad to be with you in the hour and a half of truth. recently, it's been made aware that Senator Carnahan has issued some deceptive ballot language for the November ballot for Proposition E, which would definitely change the face of Missouri, the Missouri Health Care Exchange issue, and help Obamacare to be implemented much easier in Missouri. The ballot language, by even the most least account, is deceptive and dishonest, and It's going to be very confusing for people at the ballots in November to understand what it is exactly that they're voting for, especially since they overwhelmingly in 2010 voted not to support the implementation of Obamacare here in Missouri through Proposition C. So we here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition have developed an action page, Missouri Grassroots Coalition Grass Fire Alert. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Missouri Grass Fire page. We have some information there on how you can contact all of the powers that be, Secretary of State Carnahan, Representative Tilley, Senator Mayer, Brad Lager, who has asked for a special session to be called to deal with this issue, the Attorney General, anybody that you want to contact to express your dissatisfaction over this terrible, terrible breach of justice here with this terrible ballot language. We have sample emails that you can send. We have phone numbers. We have email addresses for everyone here in Missouri to contact their representatives and to contact their elected officials so that they can make sure that their voices are heard on this yet again, because I guess it wasn't enough that we voted overwhelmingly with Prop C, but yet again that we do not want to do anything to help implement the Obamacare decision coming down from the federal government. Now, what this Proposition E on the ballot does not eliminate health care exchanges completely. What it does is that Proposition E keeps the governor from being able to executive order it in. What it does is it makes sure that the legislature gets to control and have it say your elected officials, people that you elect, get to say, you know, what, when, where, how we get health care exchanges if we have to have them in the first place. The ballot language is deceptive. If you vote the wrong way on the ballot language, then the governor will have complete control and be able to executive order these exchanges in. So it's a very important issue. People need to be very well informed. We're going to stay on top of it here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition and keep you updated on the developments. We're going to try to have Brad Lager on. Actually, we're working on that hopefully for next week to explain a little bit more about that. And we're going to follow this all the way to the end, all the way through to November, whether or not they go into special session, whether or not Peter Kinder's lawsuit is heard in the lower courts and the Supreme Court. You will be able to follow all that here on Missouri Grassroots Coalition. So please stay tuned. And once again, go to the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Grass Fire Alert page and get that information and contact your representatives. Thank you very much.
Okay, that's MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. When you get to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, you will find a button there that takes you to the Grass Fire Alert. And from the Grass Fire Alert, you'll find out all the actions that you need to take. What we need you to do is and like Lloyd said, with the whole states and Congress thing in the amendment process, there's two different paths going on here, and we want to push both paths because we can't be sure that either one of them or both of them are going to get us where we need to go. But there's Lieutenant Governor Kinder, who is filing a suit to get this language changed to get it fair, and we want to write to him. We want to encourage him. We want to write to the Attorney General, who's in this thing twofold. He is in this thing by having had to, and it's not clear to me whether this has been done yet or not, but the Attorney General does have to sign off on the proposed ballot language by the Secretary of State. If he's already done that, shame on him. But what we're going to ask him to do, and all of what you need to do is there at the website, what we're asking him to do is either rescind that from the Secretary of State and tell her to get it right, or to represent us, to join Kinder and represent the people of Missouri, which is what he wants to, which is what he's supposed to be doing. Before we go to break, we're going to talk to Bob. Bob has a question for Lloyd, I believe, about the number of states required for some kind of action. Bob, this is Dave. How are you tonight?
Hey, Good, Dave. How are you?
I'm good. Where are you from, Bob?
I'm actually from originally from St. Louis, but I'm living in Michigan now.
Living
I stay in
Michigan.
Touch with my good old state.
Good, good. We love that. What do you got to say?
Well, I just tuned in on your program a while ago, and I'm intrigued by the concept that your guest has brought up. And, you know, when you look at the Supreme Court decision we just had, I think it was over a majority of the states actually were part of that challenge. It came together. I think there was multiple lawsuits.
Absolutely.
But one of the lawsuits, the primary one, I think had over 26 states.
Yes.
As part of that lawsuit. So right there we have a majority of the states, but all of our eggs were in the basket of the Supreme Court. So I think this is an outstanding idea because it gives us another opportunity to react to federal usurpation of state rights without having to go through the nullification route, which some people are pushing now, and I think that's raises a whole other set of issues that your guest has alluded to. But I'm just curious, in practice, how would this actually work? You know, how many states would we need to get to actually repeal a federal law?
Well, take that, Lloyd. Lloyd has a specific number that he wants, and him and I don't particularly agree on it, but go ahead, Lloyd.
The version that I propose is called a representative majority of states would be sufficient to repeal. So you need 26 states, that's a majority, and to be a representative majority, those states added up would have to represent a majority of the American people. So I think you pointed out in the Obamacare lawsuit, there were already 26 states. I have added up those 26 states. They would have been enough. Once you get Texas and Florida, you can pretty much do any other 24 states you want. And similarly, if you get New York and California, you pretty much can do what you want. Does that answer your question?
Yes. Yeah, it does. Well, that's intriguing because with those states, we could not have repealed Obamacare ourselves had the repeal amendment been in place.
That is correct.
And I'm with both of you on wanting to see this repeal amendment come around, but I am skittish. I'm skittish about anything that gets done by simple majority rules. I would like to go with 2/3. I don't want to go as far as 3/4, but I don't want, you know, great for Obamacare because we want it out, and great for the light bulbs because we want them out. But there's going to be some things that the states are going to try to repeal that we don't want repealed, and I would rather see a situation not come around where New York and California and any other number of states could get it done.
Would your proposal be 2/3 of states alone, or would you also say 2/3 of the American people as well?
I would say that they would have to. Well, I don't. I would say that they would have to represent. And I see. I'm about states' rights. I don't really give a crap about the people myself, quite frankly. I am totally about the rights of the state. And if the state of Missouri wants to represent 51%. Of the people of Missouri to the federal government in this thing, that's fine with me. And so I would say, yeah, it has to be a majority of the people, but I wouldn't say it has to be 2/3 of the people, but I'd want it to be 2/3 of the state. That's more Republican, in my opinion, than Democratic.
My problem with the 2/3 of states approach, which did exist in an earlier version, so I would tell you that that was the first version that I ever saw of a repeal amendment back 2 years ago. But one of the problems it had was that 2/3 of the states could still be a minority of the American people. And so you really cannot let a minority of the American people override Congress. And that was one of its issues that it had. I think you're going to have to go with a dual approach similar to the Congress to really get that's closer to federalism, or at least what the founders thought of as federalism. So you want a majority of states, for sure, at least. And then I would say you also want at least a majority of the American people, too. You can up that, maybe go 3/5. I don't know where people are comfortable. Frankly, in my opinion, if Congress did it with a simple majority, so can the states. So you might do something clever and say, look, if Congress passed theirs by 2/3, then we got to repeal it with 2/3. But if Congress passed with a simple majority, we can repeal it by a simple majority. You might do something complicated like that, too. I don't know.
What do you say, Bob?
Well, part of it is we're not enacting a new law. We're just repealing. So I'm not as concerned about the supermajority as I might be in that situation if we're enacting a new law. For example, passing a bond issue for debt, which, you know, something that may last for 30 or 40 years, and you're literally embedding future generations. Here we're just repealing a law. So I like the concept. What I think you called it the double majority or whatever. Because the problem we've got now is we've tried. You had mentioned, Dave, you were involved with the balanced budget amendment. We came really close on that. Well, I think we had 32 or 33 states.
We need one more. We were one short.
It just seems like we need something that gives us more power back at the state. We haven't been able to succeed at constitutionally restraining the federal government. Somehow with this mechanism, I think it's a great idea. It's the best thing I've seen come down the road in a long time, because I do think the states are in this situation. Example, Obamacare, now we've got a gun to our heads. We've got to implement all this stuff. We got a little bit back from the Supreme Court on the Medicaid eligibility, that the federal government's going to come along and say, well, we're going to pay 100% of it for the first 10 years. So how can you say no to that? And you're going to have the whole healthcare industry lobbying Missouri and every other state saying, what are you, crazy? You're going to turn down this federal money so other states can get it, and our people in Missouri are still going to pay taxes for that? So, you know, the table is so slanted now against states. We need something to restore it. This may not be perfect, but it's a great idea. I think I'm really excited about it.
And, you know,
I appreciate you having your guest on.
Oh, no. Yeah, Lloyd and I are buds from a while back, and it really is, I mean, I'm not kidding you when I say it's my pleasure and my honor to have the Sloan Ranger. I feel like the co-host here, like I say. Anyway, enough of that, because I'm really pushing the break off here now. But this is, we were talking about the balanced budget amendment, and then how great this thing here is, and this harkens back to something that Lloyd was saying to me early last week, and that is these Tea Party groups, the 9/12 groups, the Fair Tax groups, are too splintered, and what they lack, he contends, is this one big issue to bring them all together. And I'm not saying issue as in something as general as fiscal responsibility or something as general as smaller government, but one specific issue that they can all, regardless of what their own independent issue is, that they can all rally around. And he sees this as that as well.
I think it could be an excellent thing to unite the Tea Party groups. We haven't found it yet, and Obama's been dividing us from the majority of the people by demonizing us. We need something to come back that unites us. Absolutely. I agree with you 100% on that.
I would say one of the things that gave me that idea, because I grew up in the shadow of the Equal Rights Amendment, but I watched the feminists put together a very successful political movement. I don't think anybody can question the success that they had as a political movement, and it pretty much was centered on that Equal Rights Amendment. They actually were very diverse groups, and they wanted a ton of different issues. They were all over the map sometimes, but they could really coalesce behind that constitutional amendment, and it galvanized them. We are somewhat similar. We have a lot of diversity and education issues, things like this. The state's repeal amendment could potentially be used to help all of our different agendas, including, say, the education people. You know, they want to get rid of No Child Left Behind. This is a way to do it from state levels.
Well, I tend to agree with that. I tend to agree with that to a certain extent. You and I had some discussion about that, and I'm not totally behind. I guess I am, as long as we let the little Right to Life group keep their right to life, and the little property rights group keep their property rights, and then just bring them on board with this. But yeah, this could be something. I'm a little bit, to hear you talk now makes me a little bit pessimistic, because as you say, the women's rights movement was huge, and they couldn't get their amendment done.
That's correct. They couldn't get it done. We should not underestimate how difficult it is to get three-fourths of state. It's not easy. And there will be progressives out there, no doubt, who will oppose this tooth and nail. I think they will oppose it as if their lives depended on it, because it really does.
Their ideology and their agenda certainly depend on it, yes.
I honestly believe they will no longer be able to continue the trend of centralizing power, which has been the history of the past 100 years. This amendment will break that and reverse it. It's serious stuff, in my opinion, yeah. And then they will fight it hard. And we'll find out who our friends are, too. Don't kid, we shouldn't kid ourselves. There will be people that we think are our friends. They will oppose this idea, and we should take a second look at them at that point and wonder, are they really our friends?
Yeah, I took a second look at a lot of Tea Party people that I backed when it came time for that debt ceiling vote. Okay, what else you got, Bob? I got about 5 seconds, and then I got to do this break. Thanks for the call.
I think this is a fantastic idea, and I want to do everything I can to help. So count me on in Michigan.
All right. Keep listening, because Lloyd's going to tell you where you can find his book and how you can get a hold of a pamphlet, and probably even maybe how you can get a hold of him.
Go to LloydSloan.com.
Okay. We'll do, Dave.
All right. Thanks. Good call, Bob.
Thank you.
I got to do this break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk to Lloyd some more, and we'll get into those things like how can you talk to Lloyd?
Okay, Missouri Patriots, I don't have to remind you that our ancestors fought and died for our right to exercise our voices and shape government in the interests of the people. And yet, in most elections, less than 20% of the population bothers to vote. Gas prices are outrageous, the economy is a disaster, and we are being regulated to death. Bad government and weak leadership are destroying the American way of life on a national and state level, and it's time to send a message to Washington, D.C. and Jefferson City and tell them we have had enough. If you're not registered to vote, the deadline to be eligible to vote in the August primary is July 11th and October 10th for the general election in November. The Patriot Revolution begins in 2012, and it happens at the polls. Vote in the August primary and the November general election, and bring a friend. The Constitutional Republic depends on it.
Now remember, brothers and sisters, we're the good guys. Don't bring any dead friends, okay? Don't bring any friends who aren't supposed to be voting, and don't bring any friends twice. But do vote, and do bring a friend. And I want to say something here that makes me sound like a broken record, because I think I say it 3 times a week. If you are a patriot, if you are for less government, if you are for fiscal responsibility, if you are for the Constitution, the election for you is the primary. That's where we separate the bad guys from the good guys. It's where if we're going to make a dent, we make a dent. And we say, you're a good guy and you're a bad guy, so we're going to throw you up there against McCaskill, and we're not going to throw you up against McCaskill because you're just more McCaskill. So the primary is the important race if you are in this movement for real. Okay, Lloyd, how long till we can see the book?
It's very close now, and I'm hoping maybe a month away, maybe two.
Oh, good.
It'll be on an online version. I'm actually pushing it to a website now in fragments at LloydSloan.com. Oh. So you'll be able to get parts of it. There's a lot of stuff in the book that doesn't just deal with Madison's Lost Amendment that I'm kind of proud of. And there's a lot of graphs and things like that. It was designed to be a Constitution class. I have a single page, what I call Anatomy of the Constitution, in the book that some people have found very helpful, and it really condenses the whole Constitution onto one page so you can see the structure of it, and it'll help you learn it. There's some nice quizzes that would be helpful for kids learning it, or even adults, frankly, to review it. It's an open book quiz, too, so it encourages you to go in and actually be familiar with the Constitution and look things up in that.
So this isn't a book we got to go to Barnes & Noble and buy?
Not yet. It's not, no.
Yeah.
No. It will probably I expect I will start self-published, although I haven't made that decision yet, and there are some other people that are, so I can't give you a publisher, though. I could not do that at this time.
Okay.
And
okay.
I will push it out. I'll push it out, if nothing else, in little PDF fragments, although I expect it to be better than that. We are in the middle of an election cycle, so a lot of people are distracted by those.
Okay. So
incidentally,
now,
I agree with your comment. For people like us, the real election is primary. It's not November. By the time we get to November, we may end up with choices we don't like at all, and that happens. Now, if we get choices we really like, then yes, we push it through and obviously get our people all the way to the end. But the real decisions are often made in those primaries for that, for real grassroots activists.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the other thing, I mean, for grassroots activists is if we're going to do this, we're going to do it not just from the state level. I mean, in your county or in your neck of the woods, there are some committee seats that are vacant. There are some local party things that are vacant. And these things need to be filled by us grassroots people. For anybody out there that's not, and I can't fill them because I'm not a Republican. They won't even let me go to the caucus. But for you people
I am
out
actually
there,
running now for as Republican committee man in Missouri River Township.
Oh, good.
County, so,
oh, good.
Yeah, I mean, but I am not a – I mean, I think many roads lead to Rome, so to speak.
Yes.
I don't know about all of them, but there's certainly quite a few that get you there. And
but,
what's important is that you get to Rome, not the road you took.
But for you conservatives who are out there complaining about the whole Romney thing and the fact that you may or may not feel like Romney was picked for you before the first vote was ever cast, that's how it's done. The committee people elect the state people, and the state people eventually elect some national people, and those national people who originated down at some county committee chair somewhere, they picked Romney for you. And,
yeah.
And that's how it works. So,
I think Romney was probably picked 4 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, right after the disaster of 4 years ago.
I think that they promised it to him. Some very influential people got on board, told him if he'll drop out and not challenge McCain, that they'll get behind him 4 years later, and that's how it was done. Yeah.
Could be. Okay, so that takes care of the book. Now, where can, like Bob called from Michigan, so where can Bob go to...
Right now, if people wanted to get in touch with me, I would go to LloydSloan.com, and they'll find, you know, and that's Lloyd Sloan, two L's, no spaces, and you'll find a website there that is being revamped even now, but it's still active, and you would get my old radio show stuff right now, I think, but this week you'll get... the more revamped one that would have all this information on it. So that go to LloydSloan.com.
Okay, that's LloydSloan, folks. Lloyd Sloan, LloydSloan.com. And you can look at him there. You got a little button there where people can contact you?
Oh, sure. Yeah, no, there's email there if you want. I'm on Facebook, too, so if you search Lloyd Sloan on Facebook, there's not a whole lot of Lloyd Sloans, I don't think. So
The other thing that the Bobs out there can do is, I mean, we are, the radio show you're listening to is brought to you by Missouri Grassroots Coalition, but you don't have to be in Missouri to be part of Missouri Grassroots Coalition. Lloyd comes around there and talks with us. He's part of Missouri Grassroots Coalition, and he gets involved in a lot of discussions. That's how I found out about him and this states' rights amendment. So always you could go to Facebook and look for Missouri Grassroots Coalition. Come there. You'll find Lloyd in and out of there and a lot of other good stuff going on. And go to our website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and take part in some of the forums and look and see what's going on. And sometimes we even talk about stuff that might be interesting to people in places like Michigan. Okay, Lloyd. I have a question for you, Dave, actually, if I can ask you a question,
because you're kind of like other people I've met in that when you've heard this idea first time, you grasp it very quickly, I would say, and all of a sudden a light bulb went off. You obviously had never heard it before, and then all of a sudden something clicked. Do you remember what it was that just clicked in you? Because that may help others. And why did you all of a sudden have that eureka moment, do you think? And you said, wow, this solves what I'm trying to solve.
Well, yeah, it was, you know, I was, it was just perfect timing for me because I was just catching on to Bill Randles, who I support for governor, and Bill is huge into the state nullification thing. So I was just beginning to study and learn about, you know, I mean, people throw around the term state nullification, but there is a very litigious path that you go through to do this state nullification thing. It's not just something you wake up one morning and say, okay, we're not going to do that anymore. And so I was just getting involved in that and all the nuances of it and all the litigations involved and what was going to transpire because of that. And then this thing came along and you sent me a pamphlet on it and I read it and I just realized right away that this could be the be-all and end-all for getting where we want to get.
Now, I do think there are people who piggyback from nullification, what I would call nullification, based on Tom Woods has a book out there on this too, which I've also read, and it dates back to the, you know, American history, the Calhoun nullification, also the Virginia and Kentucky resolutions, and some other parts of our history. I do think as a practical matter, if a single state on its own, as Arizona is even trying to do now, just stands up to the federal government, it may not be constitutionally valid, but it does have a huge practical impact. We should not ignore that. And what I'm trying to do is give them a constitutional basis for what they're doing as well, so that a majority of states could act on their behalf and undo what the federal government's trying to do to Arizona.
Absolutely, and that would be a perfect group. I mean, these nullification groups would be perfect groups to market this thing to, because I think it's a perfect transition for someone who's looking in, because nullification is the buzzword today, isn't it, Lloyd? I mean, it just is the buzzword. It is the in vogue way for you to say that your state is going to tell the federal government to shove it up their rear end, and so I think as a practical matter.
If a majority of the states got together and said, we're nullifying this,
right?
I mean, it would happen, right? So as a practical matter, it works.
Right.
I'm trying to make it constitutional with an amendment so that, you know, we can do it on the up and up. But I don't doubt that the nullifiers also tend to be working on the same problem that I'm working on. So there is a common ground in that we both are very uncomfortable that the federal government has been allowed to be the final judge of its own powers. That
right.
clearly does not work. We have got to take that problem seriously and fix it,
right.
period. So I'm all with them on that. I think it is absurd to believe that a single state alone could nullify an act of Congress or a federal law. Once you go down that path, there's some very uncomfortable history, namely in the Southern segregationists, okay, we're talking George Wallace, stuff like this.
Right.
They claim to nullify what most of us would say, you can't nullify. Okay?
Yeah.
And so you don't want to go down that path. I frankly think it's a big mistake. The left will eat us alive if we go down that path. We will not even get off ground zero.
And here's the beauty of this. I mean, you could put 26 states together today who would join with Arizona and say, okay, we're going to do something about illegal immigration. But in the end, the power, the gun of the federal government is going to come down against those 26 states, and rightly so, if the Supreme Court says you can't do that. But if you make a constitutional amendment, the Supreme Court cannot say that this is unconstitutional, because
they will agree with you.
Yeah.
They will be on your side at that point.
They'll have to be. Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right.
No, they will. They will. It's not – yeah, no doubt. You amend the Constitution, done. I mean,
okay.
We win.
I got 5 minutes left, so what I want to spend the five minutes on, I said seconds. I've got 5 minutes left. What I want to do is I want to spend that 5 minutes on the guy Lloyd Sloan. Tell us what you brought. You bring. I know for a fact you bring some education into it. So let's start with that.
Well, I'm Harvard educated, so I'll cop to that, I guess. I hope you don't hold that against me, is all I say. And you know, believe me, I know why you hate Harvard probably better than you know why you hate Harvard. So up.
No, you don't. I'm an MIT man.
Oh, are you? Well, then I really know why you hate big time. But yes, I did graduate from there, and I've had a lifelong interest in this issue, even going back to high school. I'm not an attorney. My training is in math, so I guess an MIT guy would appreciate that a little. And economics and math, I thought I was going to be a lawyer. I didn't. I went into actuarial work and then also computer work and did that for 20-something years within a reinsurance company here in St. Louis. And, you know, I know that you said it, what else? I've sung in the Muni Opera here in St. Louis. I've had a radio show. That's probably the most fun job I ever had. It was a radio job.
I marvel at your knowledge sometimes of the Madison and the Hamilton and how things went back then. But you are really when we get away from this Madison's Lost Amendment that you put a lot of study into, you are really a student of Jefferson.
Yeah, I probably read more Jefferson than Madison. And I, you know, about 10 years ago, what happened to me, I just decided I needed to read more of the founders. And I honestly wanted to start with Thomas Paine because, to me, Paine had less baggage. I can remember thinking this to myself. You know, he didn't own any slaves. You don't have to worry about that. He's a great writer. He truly was a great writer. And so he seemed like the place to start. But I got to admit, it all kept coming back to Jefferson. Jefferson, to me, was the one essential founder you had to know. His hand was on everything, and he knew everybody. He is sitting, other than the Constitution, strangely enough, because he wasn't at the Constitutional Convention, but you take Jefferson from the Revolution through his essential presidency, so important to the country. He corresponds with everyone. He is the architect of American democracy. So I devoured Jefferson and read biographies and thousands of his letters and stuff like that. And, yeah, Jefferson's my guy.
All right. This thing is the state's right amendment.
State repeal amendment.
State repeal amendment. It came from Madison to us. It originated at Madison and came to us through the mind of Lloyd Sloan, the Sloan Ranger at LLOYDSLOAN, LloydSloan.com. This thing is gaining steam. You can go to that LloydSloan.com and follow him as he puts a book together about the state repeal amendment. And you can stay on board this train as it starts gathering steam. Say some parting words, Lloyd. You got a minute and a quarter.
I appreciate you having me on the air, and I appreciate your enthusiasm. It's contagious. It makes, you know, sometimes you get an idea like this and you think, can it really be that important? Why was it, you know, seems so lost and obscure in history? But I appreciate you putting me on, and I appreciate the very sincere amount of time you devoted to this topic tonight. It's very good.
Thank you very much. The honor and the pleasure has been totally mine, Lloyd. We'll talk to you around the Facebook.
You got it. Thank
Bye
you,
now. That was Lloyd Thomas Sloan, Harvard-educated Jeffersonian, who is proposing that we rally around a state's right amendment. If you've just tuned in, go back and listen to the whole podcast of this show because you do not want to miss out getting on this train. I'm going to try to get some ideas together here myself as to where Missouri Grassroots Coalition or me specifically, if I can't get enough MGC people interested, can go in helping this thing get moving. I'm interested really in talking to our friend here at MGC, Bill Randles, who is going to be the next governor of this state, about what he thinks of this. He's a huge nullification guy, and I don't know if he's looked at this. I'd really be interested in talking to him sometime and seeing what he thinks of this specifically. Are you still in the studio, Lisa?
I'm still here.
What you got coming up for us this week on Wednesday night's Culture Vigilante?
Okay, we have interviews with Ed Martin and Adam Warren, both running for Attorney General, and I just got off the email exchange with Ed Martin. He's going to have a presser tomorrow regarding some pushback that he intends to throw out there against Koster over this ballot language, so stay tuned for that.
Good.
And also, Americans for Prosperity tomorrow, they're talking also about Obamacare. They're having a rally in Springfield in a couple of weeks, and we want to get them out there and tell the Missouri people what they've got planned to help them push back against Obamacare.
Okay, now, okay, yeah, against Koster and Koster / Carnahan. Okay, wow, that's a heck of a show, and I am absolutely into that. I want to hear Ed Martin talk. In fact, we're going to have Ed Martin on for a considerable time next week, for about the same amount of time we had Lloyd Thomas Sloan on tonight. Tomorrow's going to be great show with Vaughn Carriger. Vaughn does the Show Me Common Sense Hour on Tuesday nights, and she's going to have Bev Randles on. Bev, if you don't know her, if you haven't been out, if you've had your head in the sand out there, Bev is Bill Randles' wife, a very, very intelligent attorney in her own right, very much a part of getting Bill to where we need him to be, and that's going to be one hell of a good interview, Lisa. I'm very anxious to hear that.
She's very articulate and just a great lady to listen to, very conservative and just very refreshing to hear her thoughts.
Yeah, and then on Thursday, after Lisa, we're going to have Adam Warren. Adam's running for Attorney General as well. Am I right, Lisa?
That's right. Very interesting young man from Chillicothe. He's, I think you'll see more of Adam Warren in the years to come. He's an interesting guy. We'll have him on tomorrow night as well.
Good.
It'll be a great interview with him.
So you'll be talking to both of the Attorney General dudes tomorrow.
Yep, we'll have Adam and Ed on as well as AFP.
And I've got to make a plug here and tip my hat. I'm if you're listening to this show for the first time and haven't figured it out, I'm a libertarian. I don't get around in the circles. Lisa has been great in lining up these guests for us. And thank you very much, Lisa. She knows all these people and shakes hands with them all the time and has been really great about getting these folks on the show. Thanks, Lisa.
Oh, you're welcome. It's my pleasure. Easy to do in an election year.
And then on Monday, let's talk about Friday. Friday's the roundtable. Are you going to make the roundtable, Lisa?
I believe I will be here.
It's going to be great. We'll try to get Vaughn along. We are going to have Mike Smith, our resident expert on fair tax. He's big in the Missouri fair tax movement, and he is the leader of the fair tax movement in his county. And he's going to come along, and we're actually going to have a fair tax show, and we're going to talk at length about the fair tax. That'll be fun. And so then Monday, after the weekend, I'm going to come back, and I'm going to talk with Mike Moon, who's running against Billy Long, and with Ed Martin. So that'll be a great show. So we're looking forward to seeing you all at those shows. Lisa talked to you earlier about the Secret Santa, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Also go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and get involved in the forum. I'm anxious to hear from Ed Martin on his pushback, but we're not waiting around. We started our own pushback. And so we want you to go there. We want you to get involved in that. Click on the grass fire alert at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Visit our Facebook page, Missouri Grassroots Coalition. Tune in here tomorrow night for Vaughn Carriger, Wednesday night for Lisa Payne. That'll be it for tonight, and we will see you on the flip side. That's a wrap.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter.
You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet. Any law the federal government passed, a majority of the states could get together and say, we're not doing it. I lost you. I lost you. Are you gone?